The heavy lifting of cleaning up air pollution started in the 1960s and 70s. The leaders of the movement got a lot of pushback. One activist was called
a paranoid asthmatic with a fetish for air. Isn't that marvelous?
I'm Kara Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, we're looking at dirty air, past and present, and the struggle to finally clean it up. Plus, we'll get up close and personal with a couple of turkeys as we go on duty with a wildlife officer.
They're eating bird seed along with the squirrel out of the bird feeder.
Is that you?
Yeah, it was me.
Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. After Bernie Sanders' defeat in the Pennsylvania primary this week, his odds of winning the Democratic nomination drifted towards zero. No matter the outcome of the race, though, his campaign has been successful in highlighting key issues like income inequality. Another issue Sanders has been big on, fracking. He's against it, as are a small but growing number of Democratic politicians. Here to talk about how the 2016 campaign has reshaped the debate over fracking is the Allegheny Front's energy reporter, Reed Frazier. So, Reed, remind us, what's Bernie Sanders been saying about fracking?
Well, it's pretty simple. Hillary Clinton is in favor of fracking, and he says he's against it. And we have some tape from what he said at a rally in Pittsburgh this week.
I do believe that if we are going to preserve clean drinking water in this country, we have got to end fracking.
So big applause there.
Yeah, as you can hear, that was probably the biggest applause line he got. And I think, you know, that's just where he is on fracking and where his audience, his voters are.
Is this an idea that's gaining traction with other politicians?
It has been this year. We noticed in the Pennsylvania primary for the U.S. Senate seat that's currently held by Republican Pat Toomey, two of the top three candidates were both in favor of a moratorium on fracking for environmental reasons. Their opponent, Katie McGinty, was not. Both of those banned fracking opponents went down in the election. They got beat by Katie McGinty. So, you know, we're seeing a lot more of this on the Democratic side, not so much on the Republican side.
Well, you mentioned Katie McGinty won that race. What does the public think?
Well, this was interesting because there was a recent Gallup poll that came out that showed that a majority of Americans, 51%, are now opposed to fracking. And this is new. And I talked to two guys who I think epitomize where a lot of people stand on this issue right now, especially in Pennsylvania. I talked to Robert Jordan and Ed Warshaw at the Sanders rally at the University of Pittsburgh this week. First of all, I asked them, why were they at the rally? And the first guy you'll hear is Robert Jordan, and the second is Ed Warshaw.
We're feeling the burn.
He asked me to come.
Are you feeling the burn?
No. He called me up a couple days ago and said, there's this rally at Pitt. I went to this university for 8 years. So I always like coming down here. Plus, he owed me a hot dog for when I found his car.
Wow, a hot dog is all it took to get him to come to the rally, huh? So what did they say about fracking?
Yeah, so Ed Warshaw said he was in favor of fracking when it first came to the state because of the jobs and the general boost to the economy that you hear about. And as you heard in the clip, Robert Jordan, he was the big Bernie backer. And he said that, you know, he was kind of arguing the point that the jobs impacts were overblown and that they simply weren't worth the environmental risks that a lot of people see in fracking. And here they are sort of discussing the issue.
Those are short-term jobs for really very few people. And once it's set up, then the jobs are gone.
Okay.
You know, yeah.
But I heard some enormous figures to what they give you when they come onto your land to do that fracking operation. I mean, those people make some very big money off of all of that.
It gives you the indication of how much money they're making on this, and the hell with the stream.
And this is a fairly typical opinion that you'll hear among people in Pennsylvania. I don't know if you could tell, but Ed Warshaw was really a little bit divided on the issue. He sort of sees both sides of it. I think Robert Jordan, a little not so much. He sort of decided that he's against fracking. And maybe it's just the nature of these things where you kind of get tidbits from the news and form an opinion.
Well, there is certainly a lot of campaign rhetoric being thrown around at the moment. But how does that actually relate to the real nuts and bolts regulation of fracking?
Well, the idea of regulating fracking, a lot of it would have to come actually not from the federal level, but from the state level. I posed this question to Governor Tom Wolf's office, and I said, you know, are you guys in favor of a ban on fracking? And the answer is, as you might imagine, no, we're not in favor of a moratorium, but we are in favor of stricter regulations. As an example, they've looks like Governor Wolf's new oil and gas regulations are going to get passed. There's going to be a fight over it, but it's unlikely that the Republican-controlled legislature can overturn them. And the state has also announced they're going to do a lot more air monitoring around natural gas sites. Air quality has been a concern among environmentalists and people opposed to fracking for several years. So that's kind of been their response to the issue.
What about people who watch the industry closely? What do they think about this idea of banning fracking?
They're not so keen on it. I talked to Paulina Jaramillo. She's an energy policy expert at Carnegie Mellon University. She gets nervous when politicians make these sort of broad sweeping proposals to do something like banning fracking. Fracking is sort of the main way that the Obama administration's plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and sort of comply by the United Nations climate change agreement. That's sort of the main mechanism for boosting natural gas production to edge coal out of the power grid. Here's what she said about it.
It's a first step, and it relies on the availability of natural gas. So to just say that there's a blanket moratorium without really explaining, well, when would we start? Like, is it indefinite, or are we going to be waiting for things to change before we can start using natural gas again? It's just concerning.
Okay, so maybe she's not feeling the burn.
No, she's not, at least on this issue.
Great. Well, thanks, Reed.
Thank you, Kara.
Reed Frazier is the Allegheny Front's energy reporter. And our partners at Public Source wrote more about DEP's additional monitors in areas where there's oil and gas activity. You can read that at our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsoppel. Conflicts between wildlife and humans are increasing. That's according to the Pennsylvania Game Commission, which manages the state's 480 species of wild birds, mammals, and their habitats. And it's not just in rural areas. More and more, wildlife is showing up in urban and suburban spaces. Doug Bergman is one of the state's wildlife conservation officers. His district covers most of Allegheny County. Producer Andy Cubis spent a morning in the passenger seat of Officer Bergman's truck as part of the Game Commission's ride-along program.
It's early. It is early.
I just get in the front?
The sun hadn't yet come up when I met up with Officer Doug Bergman in a parking lot on Route 30.
You don't want to put in the front. I mean, just throw it on top. It'll slide around until it settles in.
Part policeman and part wildlife biologist, Officer Bergman's mobile office is stocked with everything from the Peterson's Field Guide to Bergs to handcuffs. In the middle console is a high-tech setup that includes a full computer monitor.
Plugging air to 418.
Let me explain how this works. Okay, this is our computer aid dispatch. What you're looking at here is my call list. If I click this button, it's going to give you the state call list.
So what's a typical day like for you?
There are no typical days. Today is actually the first day of trout, and eventually I'll start checking trout fishermen here to help the Fish Commission out, but we don't do fish. I like to tell everybody we're warm and fuzzy, they're cold and slimy.
Warm and fuzzy turns out to include turkeys, not an animal I usually think of as especially warm or fuzzy. But this time of year is turkey mating season, so the turkeys are out and about, and Officer Bergman gets a ton of calls about them.
This time of year, the males posture, they strut, they gobble a lot, and they fight. And they're trying to establish dominance so that they're the one that does the breeding.
How do you show your dominance to a turkey?
Take a broom and chase it off your sidewalk.
Arriving at destination on left.
Look out your window. Now, what are they doing? They're eating bird seed along with the squirrel out of the bird feeder.
Oh, they're so happy.
Oh, yeah. Those are two turkeys that have adapted to their surroundings.
Is that you?
Yeah, it was me.
Officer Bergman says wildlife is adapting to urban and suburban areas just fine. it's the humans that generally have the problems.
The Allegheny County District is driven by people complaining about wildlife. I get a lot of small animal complaints. I get a lot of coyote complaints, stuff like that. People don't realize just because it's developed, we have coyotes all through this district. Typically, that's an animal that people might be a little alarmed to see, but we have them here. You got to learn to basically live with that and protect yourself in a manner that allows the coyote to be there.
Besides nuisance calls, Officer Bergman also gets a lot of tips. Calls from people snitching on neighbors who are trying to keep wildlife as pets. He's confiscated raccoons, skunks, hedgehogs, and a lot of sugar gliders.
Sugar gliders are a squirrel-like animal from South America. They're not from here. So if you allow these people to buy the animals, bring them here and release them and get tired of them and turn them loose or whatever, and they should start populating, you know, now you have an animal that's not native destroying habitat that our native wildlife needs.
Wildlife conservation officers used to be called game wardens, and most of their duties revolved around regulating hunters and going after poachers. That's still a big part of the job, and a dangerous one. In fact, an officer was killed by a poacher in Adams County in 2010. But today, as human development encroaches on wildlife habitats, protecting animals is becoming paramount. Officer Bergman says that he feels like an even mix of enforcer and conservationist, and he's a man who loves his job.
Hands down, greatest job in the world. It's different every day. You get to deal with wildlife and educate people about wildlife. People have to realize that the animals were here first, and through development and whatnot, we've taken away some of their habitats, so they've adapted to us. Pittsburgh is unique in the aspect that within 20 minutes from town, you can be in wild areas. So you get these animals that come up against the city and they learn to adapt to that. It's no wonder that we have an overabundance of just about every animal.
On the Sunday morning I spent with Officer Bergman, not one citizen complaint call came in. Maybe that means, for one weekend at least, the humans and wildlife were getting along just fine.
Ligonier 213.
Go ahead, 213.
Back in the vehicle.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Andy Cubis.
There was a lot to think about back in the 60s when environmental groups fighting for clean air were founded, including what to call themselves.
Cope, CARP, GASP, CHOKE, CAP, and CAN. And a lot of them start with a C because they start with the word citizen.
Later on the Allegheny Front, we get a history lesson on one of these local groups. Take a deep breath and stay tuned. The American Lung Association's State of the Air report came out recently. It ranks cities and grades counties across the country for air pollution, like ozone, which is created when emissions from tailpipes and smokestacks react with sunlight and create smog, and particle pollution, made up of the tiny particles from those emissions that we breathe in. The Pittsburgh metro region, as well as other Pennsylvania areas like Harrisburg, Johnstown, and Philadelphia, made, yet again, the top 25 most polluted cities when it comes to year-round and short-term particle pollution. To talk about some of these reoccurring themes in the report, I called Joe Minot in his Philadelphia office. He's the Clean Air Council's executive director. Though there was some progress locally and nationally in reducing ozone and particle pollution, it hasn't changed much for our region in Pennsylvania over the last few years. Many counties like Allegheny, Lancaster, and Delaware still get a grade of F for overall air quality. Is that disappointing to you?
It's frustrating that progress has been so slow. But I guess the good news is the progress is happening. There are things in the works. For instance, the Clean Power Plan that will substantially reduce pollution. So I am optimistic.
The three-state, 12-county Pittsburgh metro region has moved off of the 25 worst list for ozone pollution, just off. It's still 26th. But can you talk a little bit about ozone pollution and what the significance is of moving off that infamous 25 worst list?
Well, Allegheny County region still has a long way to go to clean up its air and then to sort of maintain the federal health standards. And that's particularly true in that there are already proposals by EPA to tighten up those standards to better reflect the need to protect public health. And we're talking really about two major pollutants. One is ozone smog, and the other is particulate matter. They both have substantial impacts on public health. I think there is a problem with enforcing polluting facilities in Allegheny County. When Allegheny County Health Department issues a permit, which allows a facility to release a certain level of pollution, there is a commitment by the industry to abide by those limits, and there is a commitment by the Allegheny County Health Department to ensure that industry abides by those limits. And the public has a right then to rely on Allegheny County Health Department to keep them safe. That is not working in Pittsburgh region right now, where large facilities are in chronic violation of their permits, and the Allegheny County Health Department does inadequate enforcement to get them back into compliance. And it gets worse, because when environmental groups try to intervene to sort of push the industry, the county health department sort of jumps in front of them and settles cases in ways that do not protect public health.
Can you give me an example of that?
There's two great environmental groups in western Pennsylvania, GASP and Penn Future. Both of them filed a 60-day notice of intent to sue large stationary sources on the 59th day, sort of at the end of the period when they could actually file their complaint. The Allegheny County Health Department entered into a very weak consent agreement with the pollution sources and blocked the ability of environmentalists to go to court.
Is that the Clariton Coke Works?
One was Clariton. The other was Shenango, I believe.
Well, now that
you'd have to check on that.
Yeah. Well, now Shenango is no longer an issue.
Right.
It's gone.
Right.
Is it really that different from health departments in, say, Philadelphia or in other counties?
Well, that's a good question. Certainly, there are, across the nation and even in Pennsylvania, health departments or whatever the department is that's responsible for enforcing air regs. There are some good ones and there are some bad ones. In Philadelphia, I think generally the city health department is pretty good. I mean, sometimes we've had to sue them, you know, or the industry. But since the lawsuit starts, it is very rare for the health department to sort of jump in front of the citizen suit and try and settle the case, where that seems to be the sort of routine in western Pennsylvania.
This region, this Pittsburgh metro region, did move off of the 25 worst ozone polluted regions, just off that list. But could you talk a little bit about what the health risks are of ozone pollution and the significance of sort of moving off of that list or improving?
Well, clearly, it's always good news when you move off sort of a list of bad actors, if you will. And I do think that region is getting better. The two pollutants that we're most concerned about are fine particulates, which are also known as sort of soot, which people breathe deeply into their lungs, and it's been associated with premature deaths and asthma and cardiovascular disease, much like ozone smog is too. Ozone smog is a summertime pollutant, a poisonous form of oxygen that people have to breathe. Allegheny County is getting better.
But not much better.
Well, there's always room for improvement, and the thing that worries me is that as the science gets better, EPA has been tightening the standards. So there is a proposal now to tighten the ozone smog standards for the nation, and that is going to be particularly problematic for areas like Allegheny County, which already don't meet the sort of weaker standard.
So what are some of your key initiatives or priorities this year to improve air quality in our region?
Different areas have different concerns. We talked about the large stationary sources in the southwest part. I also think that all the urban areas in Pennsylvania need to do a better job in terms of controlling diesel emissions from trucks by requiring trucks to use better fuel and to stop idling. And I think there is also a need to promote the use of green energy throughout the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, which I believe is something that the Wolf administration is committed to.
Joe Minot is executive director of the Clean Air Council. I called the Allegheny County Health Department to get their take on our conversation. In an email, Director Karen Hacker said, quote, since 2007, fine particulate concentrations have decreased by nearly 40%. That's at their Mon Valley monitor, which is near U.S. Steel's Clariton Coke Works. She said while she recognizes more work is needed, quote, our most recent consent order will move U.S. Steel to compliance, or U.S. Steel will suffer large financial consequences, unquote. There's more on that at our website. That's AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple. While state and county agencies monitor air quality for all of us, you can now get more specific data about what you're breathing in your own home. You can rent a monitor. All you need is a valid library card. Larkin Page Jacobs explains.
That's for 3 weeks.
3 weeks, great.
Yes. Bye-bye.
John Horkner has been eagerly waiting to check out the spec monitor from the Carnegie Library for a few weeks. The device detects tiny particles, the fraction of a width of a hair, and counts them. The lower the number, the better. Horkner and his family live in a leafy neighborhood, but the greenery can belie high levels of particulate matter drifting through the air. And while he and his family are healthy, he tries to exert some control at home. They typically have 3 air purifiers pumping away.
I think anything above good is probably bad. There is no such thing as moderate particles. Tell that to the person that was out jogging and died of a heart attack, or was moderate today.
His family is amused by his vigilance, but now his daughter Christine and wife Nadine are gathered around the kitchen table to see what the spec monitor will reveal. Horkner guesses an optimistic 10 or lower. Nadine predicts the room will give a reading of 30.
Okay, here it is. It's at 0. Look. Calm down. Okay, back. It went up to 8, then back to 7. So 12. Oh. Here we are. Okay, kids. In a second, I'm going to turn the air purifier on.
It climbs to 22 and stays there. Next test site, the upstairs study. It scores a 20. Pretty good readings. Finally, they head to their daughter's room, where Horkner has run a little experiment. He sealed off the door with duct tape earlier in the day in an attempt to create a controlled environment.
Lock it up. Open.
Okay. Okay, let's keep the stale air in.
The verdict, 30. Not great, but not bad.
So it's the outside air. That's infiltration.
Ela Norbash attributes the particulate pollution to Pittsburgh's dirty air seeping in around the windows and up through the floorboards. He's a professor at Carnegie Mellon University's CREATE Lab, which develops technology for social innovation. Beyond infiltration from the outdoors, the air in a room is affected by a variety of activities. Norbash says the monitor can help people identify polluters in their house and change their habits. Whether it's making sure air is vented while cooking, putting a filter over a window AC unit, or vacuuming long before the kids get home so the particles have time to settle. And it's not just for those with existing health conditions. Perfectly healthy people can be harmed in the long term by dirty air.
We're talking about the kind of heart conditions like arrhythmia, like cardiovascular disease. Those are things that are going to not necessarily kill you, but they're going to make the quality of your life go down.
Norbash says they partnered with libraries because low-income people tend to live in areas with the worst air quality. The spec costs $200, and those who can't afford it can borrow it for a few weeks. Ultimately, Norbash says the goal is to change behaviors.
You start to connect how you feel and what you smell with what you see, and pretty soon you don't need the spec anymore.
Back in his home, John Horkner says he's okay with the air quality in his house, though he may add one more air purifier.
Larkin Page Jacobs is host of All Things Considered on WESA in Pittsburgh. Her story first aired on NPR last year. And we should say that the spec monitors were placed in the Pittsburgh library branches with support in part from the Heinz Endowments, which also supports the Allegheny Front. Carnegie Mellon University plans to give free spec monitors to 100 libraries across the country so that more people can check out their air.
Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh. USA.
Pittsburgh, modern miracle of industry, world's largest manufacturer of steel,
glass,
tin pipe,
aluminum.
That little ditty about industry in Pittsburgh The Workshop of the Universe was broadcast by Voice of America, the federal government's media arm, in the 1960s. Of course, all of that productivity led to some of the dirtiest air in the nation and the formation of one organization that still works on clean air issues in western Pennsylvania today. The Group Against Smog and Pollution began in 1969, and the Allegheny Friends' Reed Frazier explains that the group's early success illustrates how guerrilla marketing combined with public outrage made air quality mainstream.
You'd go to town with a pair of white gloves, and you would come home with a dirty face, especially around the mouth and nose, and dirty gloves.
That's Mrs. Martha Pendleton, a retired schoolteacher and longtime Pittsburgh resident.
That clip is from a Voice of America special from October 1970. The special highlighted the city's famously dirty air and efforts by a group of housewives, doctors, and engineers to clean it up. They called themselves the Group Against Smog and Pollution, or GASP, and were led by people like its first president, Michelle Madoff.
And we represent the little man. This, we want anybody with lungs. I don't know where you can buy new lungs.
Well, I think that in Pittsburgh, everyone knew and understand about environmental impact because you could literally taste it.
Jim Longhurst is a professor of environmental history at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse. Longhurst wrote a book about GASP. He began researching the group while getting his PhD at Carnegie Mellon University. In an interview he conducted with Michelle Madoff, she explained how the group formed after an initial meeting in her home.
There were about 30 people, and we needed a name. And somebody said, there's a group called the Group Against Smelters Pollution. And they said, why don't we adopt it? I was out of the room. And we'll call ourselves Group Against Smog and Pollution. And that's what they did. And I became president.
Longhurst says GASP was one of many groups that formed in the 60s and 70s to address pollution. And like GASP, they had short, catchy names.
There's Cope, Carp, GASP, Choke, Cap, and Can. And a lot of them start with a C because they start with the word citizen.
The group had a knack for marketing. In one successful campaign, they sold cans of clean air.
And the papers carried it because it's a visual and it's a news story. People don't understand this is how you get your information out. And I turned on my car radio, and I was driving by then. And the car said, they said, Commissioner Hunt called Michelle Madoff a paranoid asthmatic with a fetish for air. I still have it in my wallet. A paranoid asthmatic with a fetish for air. Isn't that marvelous?
Before this point in time, there were agreements about controlling air pollution in Pittsburgh, but those were generally what we call gentlemen's agreement. GASP pushed their way into those meetings and those debates.
Longhurst says GASP was instrumental in cleaning up the city's air. But the group, like the rest of the country, has changed from where it was in the early 1970s.
And I would say it would be really difficult for us to find this kind of motivation and this kind of commitment today. And it's a little sad, but at the same time, I think that given the right crisis, we could do it again.
Michelle Madoff would go on to be a city councilwoman in Pittsburgh. She passed away in 2013 at the age of 85, but GASP lives on. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
We have a link to some early 70s videos we found on YouTube of GASP's early days. That's at alleghenyfront.org. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments and the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of energy and conservation.